And welcome back. Caroline Kennedy has a special place in America's heart. Her family story is familiar to us all, and she is something of a storyteller herself. She's authored and edited 10 best-selling books over a broad range of subjects, including law, politics, and poetry, which brings us to her latest. It's brand new and titled Poems to Learn by Heart. They are not her poems, but rather an anthology of classic and lesser-known works presented in separate sections, which she introduces. Caroline Kennedy, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to see you in person after having watched you grow up. I hate to say it, but I was out of high school when you were born.
I was going to say, people feel really old when they finally see me.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you here, and you're going to enjoy your evening at St. Louis County Library tonight. I'll have more on that a little bit later. Want to talk about the book, obviously, but you know as well as I do that every newspaper in the country, every television, radio network is talking about the speculation that you're going to be appointed ambassador to Japan. I know it's difficult for you to talk about something that hasn't happened yet, but is there anything you can or would like to say about that?
Well, there isn't really anything I can say about that, and I don't know that that will happen, but you know, it would be a great honor and very exciting, and there are lots of ways to serve. So if that's not one of them, I'll find something else to do.
I saw an interview you had with David Muir the other day, and you indicated that you would be willing to accept such an assignment if it were offered.
Well, yeah, it'd be very exciting. And as I said, nothing's been offered, so we'll just see what happens.
Well, one of the things I think we can agree on, and no need to discuss it because it, too, has been well publicized, whoever gets that assignment is going to a very challenging part of the world today.
Yeah, there's so much happening over there, and I know there's always a lot in the news about Korea right now, but Japan is a very important ally of ours and has been for so long. So there's a lot to do and think about and for America.
All right. Well, we'll stay tuned, as we say in broadcasting, for what happens next. Now about the book. I really enjoyed going through it because it reminded me of so many poems that I had read as a young person. But what really struck me is what a pretty book it is. I have to commend your artist for making it a very, very attractive piece.
Well, he is a genius. And
John Muth.
Yeah. And he has written a number. He's a Caldecott winner, and he's written a number of books on his own that are absolutely beautiful and really inspiring. But I'm really happy to work with him. He's just does these magical illustrations that I think for people who maybe find poetry a little off-putting or intimidating, I think these pictures just give you a way right into the words. And if you like reading poems, I think they expand your sense of what the poems are about. So he is absolutely a genius, and I love working with him.
Why do you think people, and I don't want to say so many people, but there are people who do find poetry off-putting. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's kind of made to seem like it's only for really smart people and the rest of us can't understand it all the time. Or it's something that people feel that they study in school and it's too elitist or something like that. But really, poetry has been around for thousands of years, and it's really the way that society has passed on the great stories. And it's tied into the rhythms of music and songs and rhyme, and it's fun for little kids who are exploring language, and it's a wonderful thing for families to share between the different generations. And then now I think so much of music is spoken, and that kids are really being turned on again to kind of the spoken word, the rhythms of that. So I'm seeing a big rebirth of relevance in poetry.
Are you speaking in part of rap music?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really given poetry another kind of burst of people are interested in it. They want to learn to express themselves, and kids are writing more poetry. So it's not always that they're studying the older poets, but I think if they start writing their own poetry, then they may get interested in seeing how other people have explored some of the same themes.
A lot of people find some of today's music off-putting, if you will, because there's issues of violence and misogyny and things of that kind. Your thoughts about that? You hear that, I'm sure.
Right. I do hear that. And obviously, that's not the kind of poetry I'm talking about as sort of inspiring.
But it's out
there. It's out there. And a lot of it is a reflection of the society that we live in, which is far too violent and too misogynistic also. But at the same time, I think that it has encouraged people to express themselves. There's a lot of kind of desire to shock in some of the music, but I think that underlying that is a real sense of the struggles that people face and the issues that are facing, you know, kind of marginalized kids in our communities. And I think that we do have a literacy crisis in this country, and 14% of adults can't really read. And we all read the articles about what's happening in our schools, especially in our urban areas. So I think that as adults, our job is to surround these kids with words and ideas and language, and hopefully they'll find their own voice and their own path and get interested in learning about the world around them in a positive way.
I know you do a lot of work in New York City, with regard to what you've just been talking about here. What are you seeing in terms of improving the urban learning experience? I mean, again, we talked with the mayor about the problems with funding almost anything in any municipality anymore. What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing, you know, very mixed. I'm seeing a lot of different kinds of things. I'm seeing pockets of incredible excellence and creativity, and I'm seeing a lot of schools and students that are struggling and marginalized and disconnected or dropping out. And so I think the research is really showing that we do know that if you create a community with high standards and a strong culture and you have expectations for kids, they will rise to those expectations. But also kids who are starting way behind really need to put more energy and investment into younger and early childhood education so that they can level the playing field early on. And those investments really pay off.
Early childhood education is something we've done a lot of programming on here, and that too is one of those things that is victimized by the lack of money. What are your thoughts with regard to some of the things going on now in education, teaching to the test, for instance, and losing some of the humanities, if you will, not the humanity, but humanities along the way?
Well, obviously, I'm not in favor of that. But I feel like you know, it's unfortunate, and certainly now we, you know, there's constant headlines about cheating and teaching to the test, yeah, and people telling kids to stay home if they're not going to do well, and obviously all of that is terrible. But I think that to the extent that it's getting the community at large to really pay attention to what's going on in schools, and that's a good thing. And I think one of the jobs of our school systems is to create a more welcoming role for the community, and the community really has to step up and take responsibility, because these kids are all our kids, and we need to, you know, invest in them, believe in them, and I think that when we do that, you know, the kids really come through for us. But all working on having teachers who know their content area, working on team teaching, working on challenge-based learning, all those things make a big difference.
My father used to say, as the twig is bent, so grows the tree. And that's testimony to the fact that you get an early start, you can get put on the right path. How were you drawn to this world of poetry and literature, if you will?
Well, I was really lucky because both my parents loved to read, and I think it was something that that surrounded me. And as I've been raising my own children, I realized that was really one of the best gifts that I was given and I've tried to pass on. And my mother in particular really loved poetry, and she had a very close relationship with her grandfather, and he used to teach her poems, and this very sort of old-fashioned courtly gentleman. And I think that she really loved it and encouraged my brother and I to choose poems for her for a birthday or Christmas presents. And I think that really allowed us to explore in a very free and open way that wasn't about school. And we both came to really, I think, appreciate and enjoy the kind of language and rhyme. And she had a great sense of humor. And so it was really integrated into our daily life and into the holidays in a way that was fun.
Can you be more specific about how it was incorporated exactly? Did you just read them out loud or write
No, I
them?
Mean, she knew a lot because she had to – memorizing was really a big part, yeah, of her generation. And so she, you know, she would just quote poetry. She always knew the best clues in a charade game. She always had the lines of poetry that would make our team win. And she, as I said, we picked out these poems for birthdays and Christmas, and that was really our choice. But it was certainly something that, you know, I think if you love something or you feel confident about it as a parent, you know, your kids will like it. But it goes the other way. If you can get a kid interested, they can share it with their parents, and then both people have something to enjoy.
You put great stock in the whole memorization thing. I mean, the title of the book speaks to that, Poems to Learn by Heart. Is that what you're really after? Do you want the young people who read this book to learn these poems by heart?
Well, I've found that poems that you learn by heart, even if you don't learn the whole thing, there's a line or two that'll stick with you. And the good thing about learning them by heart is that you become really familiar and you have a chance to kind of try to get inside the poet's mind and have a conversation with the poet or with yourself. And I think that that's, you know, kind of what we're all looking for is connection to others.
Yeah. The poems that you've selected here, tell me about the selection process. I think there are 100 of them or so, just about 100 of them. There are certainly a great many poems that were written over the centuries. How did you pick the 100 you chose?
Well, I was trying to find something for everybody. I asked my children to recommend things. I went back to the poems that my brother and I had enjoyed as children. I asked my friends for suggestions of poems that meant something to them, and some of their children sent in. And then I got some kids that I work with in the after-school poetry program to come and talk about the poems with me and go over them. And I thought they'd have ideas about what they would like or their younger brothers and sisters might enjoy. So it was kind of a wonderful process for me, not just me sitting by myself reading poems forever and ever. And I think it's in that way I'm very happy because now when I'm going around talking about it, I have kids performing everywhere and doing spoken word kinds of events. So I think it kind of shows people what's possible.
Do you like to read poems aloud? Would you want to read one here for our audience?
Sure, yeah. I'd be happy to.
As long as you admit it's not the charge of the Light Brigade or something that will take us in a Terry Gross's show. But, yeah, I'd love to hear you read something if you would.
Okay.
And we'll ask members of the audience if they have a favorite poem, too. Let us know about it. Carolyn Kennedy is our guest. It's such a pretty book. It really is.
He did an incredible job.
How long does it take you to put something like this together?
Well, this happened actually a while ago, and I was doing other things also at the time. So it depends how much time you put into it, I guess.
You can't stop and look at the pictures now.
Oh, are you waiting for me to find it? I'm just looking for... Well, you know, the Charge of the Light Brigade is one that I memorized, actually. I didn't really...
Oh, well, if you'd
like
to do it.
It was kind of warlike for me, but my brother was memorizing lots of battle poems at the time, so I thought I should, too, but I don't know why.
I enjoyed seeing Casey at the Bat again.
But yeah, well, you said I couldn't read a long one,
That's one that I happen to memorize, but I'm not going to recite it. But I was particularly struck by something I hadn't known, and that is that Grantland Rice, the noted sports writer, wrote a kind of a sequel to that, if you will, giving Casey another chance to redeem himself.
I
really, really enjoyed having a chance to see that.
Oh, well, good. Yeah, when my son was on a baseball team, we got it to know the Casey's Revenge as well. So I figured, you know, there's a lot of poems about sports in here because people seem to think that poetry is for girls, and that's obviously not true.
Well, boys do have certain built-in resistance to it, I would have to say.
Yet the great poets are often men.
Well, they grow out of it.
Yeah. So anyway, we got to start young, though, so it's fun. A lot of kids who go on to acting start with poetry. So yeah. Here's a poem by Robert Frost called Dust of Snow. The way a crow shook down on me the dust of snow from a hemlock tree has given my heart a change of mood and saved some part of a day I had rued. I like that because it's kind of like those unexpected moments that come along and kind of change the way you see the world around you.
Robert Frost is certainly one of my favorites and the favorite of many. I went to Middlebury College in Vermont, and it was not unusual to see Robert Frost wandering around campus. He lived there. And that was a great thrill for me because... as I say, I've enjoyed his work so much. Getting back to this whole question of literacy, one of the things I'm noticing today, and I wonder about, is the fact that you don't see many books in homes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see children, young people with books so much anymore. All the reading they're doing, or much of the reading they're doing, is on their cell phone. Your thoughts about that? I mean, we're really kind of changing direction, are we not, and the way we absorb information and even literature.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think it's more important than ever for kids to be able to distinguish between kind of the authentic voice and cut through a lot of the information that's coming at them all the time. So that's, I think, another aspect of the role that poetry can play. But access to information is more important than ever, and certainly the technology makes that possible. But, you know, there's still a lot of people who don't even have that kind of access. And so there's a lot of different levels of that issue, whether it's access to information, you know, the digital divide, as well as the disappearance of books and all of that. But I think that their kids are still reading, and so it's just taking different forms.
I've heard it said, for instance, it's okay if your kids read comic books because at least they're reading.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, maybe it's good if they don't stay only with comic books. But there's a lot of graphic novels that kids find really compelling.
Right. By the way, we just had an email here, and I don't have an identity on the writer, said, I learned it by heart in ninth grade English at Friends School in Baltimore 40 years ago. My favorite poem is called Dust of Snow.
Excellent.
So you picked a really good one. You've broken your book down into various sections, and you write introductions to each of these sections. How did you determine what the theme was going to be? Did you pick themes first, or did you pick poems first and then kind of jam them into a category?
Yeah, more. I pick poems I like, and then I put them into piles. But also the kids, some of the kids that helped me, you know, one of them really liked poems about monsters, and one of them really liked poems about friendship, and one of them then there's another one, they really responded to the funny poems. So I figured that those were three of the sections. And then there's other sections about, obviously, nature and
sports and stuff.
I wanted sports. And I knew that it was important to have a section on war, if you will, because I think that kids are thinking a lot about that. And at least the time when I was doing this, we were active and involved in two wars. And a lot of times poetry is really thought of as more sort of just about inner emotions. But in fact, so many of the great poems are really epics of sacrifice or bravery and courage. So those are in there too.
Yeah. I've asked folks if they'd like to tell us what their favorite poems are to let us know. We have a call from Ed calling from St. Louis. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm old enough to remember Robert Frost talking at the inaugural address, and my favorite Robert Frost line is in my wallet, and I'm going to read it. Education is the ability to listen to almost anything without losing your temper or your self-confidence.
That's great. I haven't heard that. Where is that from?
I think Ed is
yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ed.
Putting that back in his wallet even as we speak. Let's bring in Karen calling from Belnor. Karen, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering if she was familiar with a poem by Robert Louis Stevenson called Playthings.
Probably. How does it?
It's 12 lines. I've never seen it in print, but my mother taught it to me when I was a small child, and it's been among my favorite ever since.
Oh, great. Can you say any of them?
Sure. The streets are filled with human toys, wound up for 80 years. Their springs are hungers, hopes, and joys, and jealousies and fears. They move their eyes, their lips, their hands. They're marvelously dressed. And here my body stirs and stands, a plaything like the rest.
Wow, that's great. It's not in a Charles Gardner Versus, I don't think, but now I'll have to go searching. Thank you.
12 lines. I think the last four are, let's see. I'm sorry, I can't think of them right now. Anyway, I just wondered if you were familiar with that, and I wonder why I never see it in print.
Well, I think you tend to see the same poems over and over again. But even if you read the whole Child's Garden of Verses, maybe it was in another volume that he did that isn't as popular. I don't know. And there's a lot of poems out there. I had a poem that I really wanted to put in by George Eliot, and then I went back and I really couldn't find it in any of the real authoritative editions of her work. So sometimes people poems come along that sound a lot like they could be by the person, but they can't be authenticated. So I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm going to go look it up now, see if I can find it.
Karen, thank you so much for your call. Are you finding, as you travel around the country and talk to people about this, that there are folks who are saying, gee, I wish you had included this, or you should have included this?
Well, people who like poetry are nicer than that. I think they are more likely to say, I didn't know this one, but thanks for including it. But I think the point really is that, you know, as we're hearing, that people do recall these things and carry them with them throughout their lives. And usually it's also carries memories of somebody special in your life as well. So I think that poems really are kind of these little capsules of emotion and memory that stick with us and really, I'm sure, remind her of her mother as well as the poem. And so it's really got a lot of levels.
And you worked with your children along these lines, reading and poetry and working with them on this. I know that I've been reading that. They're older now. They're adult children. How have you seen – I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. How have you seen that grow in them, you know, the early exposure you gave them and where they are now with regard to this?
Well, I have sort of a range. I have one daughter who's really a bookworm and loves it and actually translated some Latin, which is in this book, which she did a great job. And I have another who enjoys it and reads a lot but isn't as passionate. And then my son who says that he absolutely hates poetry. And mm-hmm. he gave me a poem for the book, but he says he's done now. He only likes two poems. So I think that you never know. But I think that they actually – I think he's just a big – fat liar. So I think that he secretly, I think it's something that sticks with you and you know that you can return to it and you're not afraid. And that's the whole point.
What are the two he likes?
One's in my other book, The Red Wheelbarrow, and he likes that one by William Carlos Williams because it's really short. And then the one in here by Wallace Stevens called The Jar, which is great. It's sort of about nature and he's really into the outdoors.
Okay. Let's take another call. Patty joins us from St. Louis. Patty, go ahead. You're on the air with Caroline Kennedy.
Hi. What a wonderful program. Thank you so much. I love a poem. I love two poems by Robert Frost. The first one is Birches. I think it's incredible. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yeah, that's great.
One could do worse.
Lovely poem. And then the second one is Devotion.
Oh, that's in the book.
Is it in the book?
Yep. Yeah, which is great.
I'll buy that book. I love that book. But I also like I don't know. There's just so many poems that I like. I just think they speak to so much in our lives. And I thank you for doing the book. I'll go out and buy it.
Oh, well, great. Thank you. I hope you like it.
I will. Don, thank you for these programs that you do. They're just terrific.
Well, thank you for listening. We certainly appreciate it. By the way, you can see Caroline Kennedy tonight at 7 o'clock at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh, just south of Highway 40. She'll be there at 7 o'clock, and I'm sure she'll be talking about that book because that's why she is here. In the time we have left, Caroline Kennedy, I'd just like to ask you a question about family service. I'm always interested in people like yourself whose families have such a rich history of service to the country, community, what have you, about the motivating factor. I mean, this transcends generations. It goes on and on and on. Why? What is going on with families such as yours?
Well, I'm sure everybody has their own, you know, answer. But I think if even, you know, research shows if you're exposed to something when you're young, it's more likely that you're going to continue to do it. And that's true with volunteering. It's true with community service. So that's why it's so important to show children what, you know, these things that we think are important. And I think if you do something with your children and they know that you love it and you enjoy it, then they'll probably continue it in their own life. And that's certainly something that happened in our family where the adults, you know, took us along and exposed us to the different kinds of service that were available, and they enjoyed it, and it was fun for all of us. And the same thing happened with history. My Uncle Teddy organized these trips for our family to go to historic sites. So it was a lot of fun for the cousins because we all got to fool around together at the same time we got an interest and an appreciation for history. So I think it's just it's a fun and creative opportunity that you have as a parent to expose your children to things that you care about. And I think service was certainly one of those things in our family. It started probably with my grandmother and her deep faith, and also my grandfather and her interest in politics. So if you combine all that.
Did you have a sense that that's where you would be going at a very young age?
Oh, no, I have no sense of where I'm going to be going at any age.
And perhaps even at this age,
yeah,
right,
exactly.
Given what we started talking about. Well, Caroline Kennedy, I'm so appreciative of your being here today. I know the audience enjoyed the opportunity to have a chance to chat with you. The book is Poems to Learn by Heart. It's an anthology. Caroline Kennedy is the editor, I guess, is the best way to put
right.
that, and also wrote the introductions to the various segments. And Ms. Kennedy will be at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh near Highway 40 at 7 o'clock tonight talking about her book. Folks, we'll welcome you there tonight.
Well, thanks.
Thank you for being with us. And let's see. The rest of our business is to say goodbye. Tomorrow on St. Louis On the Air, we'll take a look at the 6th annual Clinton Global Initiative University that takes place at Washington University this weekend to facilitate calls to action in education, which we've just been talking about, environment, human rights, poverty, the alleviation of poverty, and also public health. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.